remarks before we get started on our presentation this morning. I am Bill Dirks. Just to brief you on my own personal situation, I'm a retired pastor, Missouri Synod type. I've been in the Navy 21 years and a parish for 13. And I was on the Holden board for 13 years until a couple years ago, and I decided 13 years was enough, besides which the regulation said I had been on there enough. So I have been given another job, and that is to keep the historical records, minutes, and reports on the village, a set, an official second set outside of the village, so that in case anything happens to the village or to the papers in the village by fire or whatever, or catastrophe, there will be a record kept, and that will be kept in fire box in my house. Let's see, a couple other things I wanted to say. Oh yeah, we're beginning a verbal history now of the village. We figured about time we got around to that. It's been over 20 years since we've been operating the village as a retreat center. And we're in the process of interviewing those who were involved in the village in its era, which it's in now, as Holden Village Incorporated, run by a corporation, a board and trustees in conjunction with the Lutheran Church, and therefore also open to all to come for retreat and renewal. We are taping those who were involved in that early beginning, starting in 1960, 61, 62. In 62 was the first official board of the village. And what I've gotten into so far has been highly fascinating, but these tapes will be available. That is, we will make initially three copies, one for the official file, one for me, and one for probably the tape ministry office in the library here, or perhaps we'll put it up in the portal in the museum. But we do have some written record about the Holden Mine, or the village as it was operated under the Howe Sound Mining Company. And every so often we have someone come up here who has been participant in that. We have with us from California, Richmond, California, William Sartain and his wife, Theda Sartain. Make sure I pronounce that right. They, well, about 11 years ago, you were interviewed by Carol Hinderley, right?
Yeah, I believe it was about
that. Well, so there is on record an interview. I don't know where it is, whether it's in the tape library or not. I haven't gotten into that far yet. But we figured we better do it again so that you might find out what went on here during the mining days, and that I think probably you're a better group anyhow than that 11 years ago. We'll open it up for questions after we get into it a little bit. And since this will be recorded, if you have a question to ask, do it nice and loud so it gets out in the microphone and into the tape. As soon as I give a knock on the chimney here, that means the recorder is going to start recording. So you can laugh, you can do anything else in response to the presentation by the Sartain. Feel free, relax, and so forth. This is not a highfalutin formal interview. I wouldn't know how to do one of those anyhow. So we just talk together here, and we can talk together as a group as we talk with Bill and Theda Sartain. Any questions up to this point? Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
What we are about to hear this morning is a presentation, well, not exactly a presentation, just an informal talk with two of the many people that were involved in the Holden Mine in the days before Holden Village came into existence as a Lutheran retreat center for all. We have with us William Sartain and his wife Theda Sartain from Richmond, California, and They were up here, at least Bill was up here. I forgot to ask Cedar whether she was up here at the same time. From 48 to 54, the names are on the blackboard here, or whiteboard, as you can see, maybe. They were up here this time, and it is that history of the mine, because it's a fascinating history, what went on up here in the days. Just briefly, the mining company started operation in 57. I guess the first revenue producing load of ore went out in 37 and 38. I get my dates right here. Yet 38, and it operated from 37 to 57. Bill, will you take over from my fumbling here and go ahead and see what you can tell us about your days of your job at the time and coming back again, and some of your reflections from this time, this perspective.
You mean up to now?
Yeah.
Well, when I first came up here, I hired out as a mucker. And what you did, you went underground and you worked with a shovel. A shovel, that's all, a muck stick, they call it. But then I started breaking in mining with some fellows who were really good at mining, and I learned it how to drill and blast, carry timber, hang pipe, air and water pipe, ventilation pipes, and that's the way it was. And from then on, while I was mining, I was about 20 years old, I think, when I started. And now I work for Bio-Rad Laboratories in Richmond, and I'm a chem technician there. We're in chemical and medicine research. And mostly what I do there is make the DNAs and ATPs for purification of the proteins and affinity gels that use in cancer research. And how they do that, I couldn't tell you. All I do know is I have formulas to make them by, and I do that end of it. I have a certain amount of lab work to do and a variety of jobs. It's pretty much diversified. It makes it real interesting work.
Your mining days then led up to this here.
Yeah,
I
right.
Prepared you a little bit for
yeah.
that. Were you married when you first came here?
Yes.
We
were married. We were married in Lewiston, Idaho on March 1st, 1947. All right. Yeah.
This is practically a honeymoon.
Yeah.
Right. Well then, I think probably we're not so much interested in the administration part of the mine at that time, but just ordinary everyday life around here. I guess the single fellows lived in the hotel, right? And did you ever enjoy Honeymoon Heights when you first came?
No, Honeymoon Heights by that time was closed down. That was for the earlier day miners.
Okay.
And when the old campsite was opened up, which is back up this way, then everybody moved down there. I had the opportunity to live in the dorms for a while before I brought my wife up here. Mm-hmm. And I've had a pretty good overall education of the place, working with guys and bunking with them and eating with them, and then also living a family life.
First we lived at Lucerne.
Yeah, first we did live at Lucerne.
Yeah, how long were you down at Lucerne?
About 500, 600.
What's that?
People
what?
Living.
Oh,
here.
People here at the
total.
Time. Yeah, we didn't hear
about
that
600 total. Minutes.
Where did you live?
When we first moved, I think he was working here. We lived at Lucerne, and one of the little cabins was called Gettysburg. Oscar Getty owned those cabins that are still standing down there, and so that's where we first lived. When he was working in the mine, and he'd go back and forth by bus to work. And then later we moved into an apartment up here in one of the home sites upstairs. They had an apartment. And shortly after that, we bought a home in a new section on up the road as you go toward the ballpark. Mm-hmm. On the right-hand side where you see the steps and the walls, mm-hmm. We bought a home there.
Can you take us on a little tour, walk up the steps, and we'd come visit you in our imagination? I'm just curious to know how big the houses were and how close they were and what the yards were like and the layout inside and if you had kids and school.
It was they were nice homes. We had a three-bedroom home, a living room, a kitchen, bathroom, full basement, front porch, back porch, no garages. And ours was in the new section, so at that time, I think you completed the wall mm-hmm. and the steps and built the porch.
Basement.
The basement. We and bought it from another couple that built it. And we had oil heat for heating. No problem with electricity. We didn't have telephones. And they were nice.
Did you raise kids up here?
We had two children. My oldest was 2 months old when we moved to Lucerne in a little cabin. No running water, no electricity. Only a short time they would have electricity from a generator. Just a little while, and then you'd have kerosene lights washed by hand. Or they had a wash house where you could go and use a washing machine and also the bathrooms. That was the only facilities we had. But mostly they were on just a short time and then you used your kerosene light. And the cabins were very, very cold. You had the outside wall, cardboard, you know, for the inside, and a little tiny wood stove to cook on, to heat the place and everything. So it was quite an experience.
Did you live there in the summertime or the winter too?
We lived there both.
Were the trails open then to for you to get back and forth during your work day?
The road?
In the wintertime?
Oh yes. Now the company here had two big bulldozers. They had a road plow going like 24 hours a day because of this heavy snowfall. They just kept them going around the clock. I mean, if it started snowing at night, why, they'd get the crew out if it was necessary and start working on the roads. That's the only way, because they had to keep the ore trucks moving. Okay. Yeah,
that was important.
That was important because that's how we made our living.
Do they have to truck the ore down to the landing then?
Well, you might explain to them how the whole smelting business here, semi-refining business.
Well, I'm not too familiar with that. Of course, the ore would come out of the mine by railroad. I think we had the tracks on the 1500 level train or cars. I think there were 12. It would pull 12 cars and hold about 10 ton of muck, if I remember right now.
Is that electric?
Electric.
Engine,
yeah, there's all electric.
Of it. Yeah. Battery operated.
Yeah.
Charge it every night. Right?
No, they were. They had trolleys.
Oh, they had trolleys?
Yeah, they were trolley,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, they were?
Yeah, there's trolley.
Oh, there's a cable. I see a cable with a huge connector on it. On that
okay,
line.
Well, now the intermediate levels, they did have those battery type of motors that had to be charged. Mm-hmm. But they were on the smaller levels that wasn't a high production level, mm-hmm. like the 1500. The 1700 was one. A high production level, and the 2500 levels.
Now the portal up here, as we know it, is at the 1500 level. Yeah.
Anyway, to come out, pull the ore from the number two shaft and bring it out to the mill and dump it. And from there it would go through the crushers, ball bearing crushers. The magnets, big magnets, would pick up any steel or metals that was blast out. Sometimes you'd stick a steel while you were drilling and then couldn't get it out, you just blast it out. Usually ended up down in the mill, they take it out in the mill. And then it went through a flotation process. And I'm not, you know, I couldn't tell you exactly how. Maybe somebody here could explain it better than I could. But also they had, they cyanide the gold out of, I think the gold was probably concentrated with the copper, but anyway, when it left here, it was in a powder form, the copper, silver, and the zinc. And of course, the company stored their gold in a that was cyanide in a little shed up here on the hill, and drums above, small drums.
Do you have any idea how much gold they took out in the area?
Oh gee, I heard so many different stories.
It's all in the book.
Yeah, I should have a book to refresh my memory.
How many miles of tunnel was there?
Oh,
I've read that too much.
That's also in.
I think that, you know, I heard at one time altogether, Our intermediate levels, the main levels, there's something like 200 mile of track. Yeah. And every place, you know, it's just all kinds of tunnels in there. And over a period of 20 years, you can go a long ways.
Yeah. The ore, to continue the, for your information as to what happened to the ore, this semi-refined ore, was barged, was trucked down to the dock, loaded on barges, went from down the lake to Chelan, put on freight cars, I think, then, wasn't it?
Right, at Chelan Falls.
Yeah, and then went down to Tacoma, to the smelter there, for the final refining. But that was a lot of handling then, transportation. And I guess when the price of ore went down, why they couldn't afford to operate up here. So, bang, that whole
the
you
trucks
were there, though, were you, for that? No,
no, we left in 54, close to 57.
Yeah. The trucks that carried the buckets down, I think each bucket would hold 5,000 pounds, a huge bucket. And then, of course, they had a crane down at the Lucerne dock that would load them on barges. They had two barges, one coming and one going.
About how many trucks a day did they run out of here?
I have no idea. I have really no idea. It all depends on how, it would depend on how production was going along, because it varied at times. Sometimes the muck that came out of the mine wasn't as high grade as others, and it varied quite a bit. So I really couldn't.
Did your kids go to school here?
No. When we left here, our oldest was a little over 3 years old, and the other daughter was about 7 or 8 months old. So they didn't attend school.
Well, these pile of tailings was all run down there with water?
Yeah, the tailings out here?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then they might have a bulldozer to keep the edges high so the water wouldn't run over?
Yeah, they had. I tell you, before I left, they were trying to get tailings back into the mine, and they were pumping, had a big pumping operation going and pumping the tailings back into the stopes.
That was a government regulation or something?
Yeah, they're starting to crack down on on this. Too bad it couldn't have gotten it all back in there.
They've been a lot better for all of us.
Yeah, it would.
How deep down did you go in the mine?
I worked down in the 2500 level. See, on the 1500 level, you go back to the number two shaft, and it's 1200 feet, and the 2500 level is at the bottom of that. There's different levels, though. 25.
Where's 0 point in the
zero
here? Up or down? In other words, that's 1500 feet from where? The bottom or the top?
You know, I never had anybody explain that to me.
I've often wondered about that. I've never been able to find an answer.
Yeah.
Is that as deep as it went then,
2,500?
2,500
foot level.
That's as deep.
When you go back, straight back into a mountain, a mile, roughly, and then sink a shaft from there, we were supposed to be getting pretty close to the level of Lake Chelan, pretty close. And then, of course, you've got a lot of rock over your head when you're down there, too. The mountain is what, about 8,900, 8,700 feet high, something like that? Got to take all that into consideration, too.
Yeah. When was this set aside as a national forest area in here? At the time the Holden developed this, was that apparently was before the National Forest Service had this set aside then?
After we left here, they declared this a wilderness area, most of it around here.
But it was belonged to the Forest Service when we lived here.
Yeah, under the Forest Service. It was under the Forest Service.
He actually owned this property, or staked this claim, right? For the mine?
Up by the mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a national forest area at the time, or apparently it wasn't, if he actually owned it, or did he own it?
I don't know.
But this area down here was national forest. Right around the claim, you had a couple openings up there, right? And one at the 1500 level, which we all know about because you can go up there and look at it, even though you can't go in it. But if you go over a little bit further around, up a little bit higher, you can see where there's more openings. In fact, you look back up the top here at the Chalet Road and Chalet Circle, and you can look back and you can see some outcroppings up there.
So actually, he just staked the claim.
Yeah.
When you were here, was there a church?
No.
So there weren't any Sunday services for miners or family?
Not that I know of, was there?
Well, once in a while, a father would come up and visit the Adams family, I remember. I never saw too much of him come around the
camp. You perhaps knew, I've heard about John and Agnes Adams. He was one of the first miners, probably came in about the very first, I think.
Suppose there was anybody that worked the full 20 years through the mine here, the workers?
Yeah, I think there was a fella, I think his name was Chris Whipple. Mm-hmm. Whipple, I believe it was. And he was a hoistman.
What kind of shifts did you work, from 10-hour days or?
8-hour days.
8-hour days, 5 days a week?
No, we worked six most of the time, and I have worked 7 days for months in and months out.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. But it was mostly an 8-hour shift.
Yeah.
Did these shafts go straight in and then drop down?
Yeah, the portal goes straight. Yeah. That's a portal or a drift. We call them drifts.
Well, then where did the, you'd have to have some sort of an elevator service that went down. Mm-hmm. How did they attach that thing to the rocks? Or how did they arrange for that descent down into this hole that I wouldn't want to go into?
Well,
I'm just thinking of what's happening in your mind when you went down there also.
Well, when you, on the 1500 level, they had a hoist room, and it was, it was big. It was steel beams, and they had two hoists. One was a 15,000 horse, I believe. That would be the man hoist. And the muck hoist was a 25,000 horse. And they had what you call raises, driven at an angle like this, to the shaft. And that, they ran the cables through there, and of course they had the big wheels. The cable would roll over, and they had the cable to a 20-man cage, is what it was. What we had, and the muck skips. Each one would hold 2 tons of muck, and they ran in counterbalance in the shaft. In other words, when one was full, they had it arranged so that the other one would help lift it up, it's like this. But the man cage was, it was a good safe cage, as far as going down 1,200 feet, I guess.
Are you an engineer, Mr.
How did you get your groceries?
Are you an engineer?
A what?
An engineer.
Now, you mean?
Yes.
No, I'm a chem technician for Bio-Rad Laboratories.
Was there any people killed at the time you were here?
Yes, yeah, there were a few killed.
In fact, you helped get the neighbor across the street out that was killed, lived across from us.
Okay. Was there any predominant ethnic group that perhaps?
Ethnic group.
Was there any predominant ethnic group?
No, it was all mixed. Yeah, no, it was all mixed. There were, I worked with guys, fellows from Germany and Irishmen, Welshmen, Scotsmen. Just a good mixture.
Was the union in here that night? Was it union? Mm-hmm. Union night?
Yeah, mine, mill, and smelter workers. I still got my old union card.
Now you had to get paid. Did they pay you in script or what? How'd they work that?
Yeah, well, when I first came here, my wages was $10.64 a 8-hour shift. And then when I got to mining, I got paid so much a foot. Whatever the going rate was, I don't know. You made more money that way.
Yeah,
they call it jippoing.
Yeah, once a month or how'd they work?
How often do you get paid?
Your
we got paid, what, every 2 weeks? Huh?
I think so.
Yeah, every 2 weeks.
You were paid by check.
By check, yeah. Well, that is if you didn't draw it all from the company store before payday. That happened too.
Were the prices in the company store reasonable or was it?
They were high.
They were
higher than they would be in China.
Got all that transportation.
Yeah,
to pay
transportation.
For to get up there.
It was a real convenient. To tell you the truth about it.
Yeah. Cheaper than going down and
flying. Yeah, you couldn't afford to go down.
How did you do your banking?
Banking?
Yeah.
Well, not too many of them after payday. They get down here when the 4, 5, 6 tables and gambling. Didn't have to worry about banks too much.
Well, how did the winner do his banking?
Seattle First National, probably.
Yeah. No, it was Miners and Merchant Bank, I believe, in Chelan that did most of their business. There were a lot of real conservative people here. What I mean is they were save their money and trying to look to the future a little bit. And I'm sure a lot of them who left had a, what you call a grub stake or a nest egg or whatever you want to call it.
You know anything about that big heavy-duty truck that's laying upside down up there and at the mine?
Well, that was part of the village property. Got burned up in the garage fire.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I thought it had been burned.
Yeah. We had a big garage fire here a few years ago. That's why we have a new looking garage up there.
You still have a reunion every year, don't you?
In Chelan, they do have in August every year. Nigel Adams, probably some of you have heard about him. Who was the son of John Adams, the one I mentioned that was a miner, one of the old-time miners. He has wrote a book about the mine. I'm sure you've heard about that and probably read it.
Yeah, well, it's for sale in the village store.
Okay, well, we knew them very well. They had a daughter named Janet, and she used to babysit for me.
What did you need a babysitter for? Did you play cards, or did you dinner, or did he come home for lunch? Or?
Oh, bowling. We used to go bowling. I had bowling leagues. I learned to bowl, and so she used to watch my daughter when we go bowling. And they had always when anybody had a baby, they had a baby shower. I don't care if it was one child, two, or four, or five, and everybody was invited. Almost it was just everybody,
a big family,
big family thing, and potlucks, picnics, all kinds of things.
Okay.
Was there a school?
The school was here. The grade school was here.
Right over here in Narnia.
Right, the one that's here right now. Mm-hmm. I think Mona Getty taught school there, Oscar Getty's wife, that had, the cabins in the CERN. And they were also had the post office in the CERN. And there was another resort in Lucerne at the time we lived there, ran by people who were named Renslow, which was nicer cabins if you could possibly get in one of those. And they had a store and a tavern there. In that area, that's all gone, I understand.
Yeah, there was no tavern or anything up like that up here, was it?
No, they didn't allow it because of Forest Service
law. You made your own.
Yeah.
And the
hasn't
homes
changed today from those days, huh?
And the homes had to be built according to specifications. The Forest Service wouldn't let them just build them, a little shack or anything. So they had to be pretty well-built homes. A lot of the homes were built on the same style as these buildings here.
Did you have a feeling of isolation, or was your community close enough that you kind of all reinforced each other so you didn't feel so cut off from the rest of the world up here?
I think, you felt really close. Once you got acquainted with so many people, it was just like one little community. Everybody knows everybody, and it didn't seem that way to me. You kind of miss things, but you could always go down the lake and go out on the boat to Chelan.
Did you leave often to do that?
Not too often. And there was planes also. They had seaplane service back and forth. They also had the hospital here at that time. There was a doctor here. But they didn't. Well, they took care more or less of the miners and minor things as far as delivering babies. There was only one baby that was delivered here when we lived here, and that one didn't make it out, the next door neighbor.
But ordinarily for a birthing, you would go into Chelan.
Into Chelan,
And that baby, it was the only one born here by the name, was last name was Meredith. And it was the only one that was known to be born here. And they were our next door neighbors.
Would you have known a gentleman by the name of Royce Richardson?
Pardon?
Royce Richardson.
I understand he was the superintendent of the mine here at one time.
Richardson, that
Royce
would be.
Royce Richardson. Was he a superintendent of the mine when you worked here?
No, John Bly was. When I worked here.
I happen to have movies taken, I think, in about 1948 of the area here. And perhaps I can, for your archives.
Well, if he was here before John Bly, I wouldn't have known him.
I see. The pictures I have may have been taken in 1941 or 40, something like that. Maybe it was in 48. I don't know, my parents are born.
We're looking for private pictures for
but
our
But I do have
yeah.
some 8mm shots of the area here.
I like to do that a lot. Over here there was a question, I think. Somebody wanted to have a question. If not, we'll go back over to the other side.
I was just going to ask if the mining operation, was it a relatively safe operation up here, or was there any...
Well, yeah, your working area, you made it as safe as you was responsible for making it safe. But as time went on, the deeper they got, the ground got heavier, and it required more timbering down the lower level. It was caving quite a bit.
Our brother-in-law was killed in the mine here after we left here.
Caved in?
Blasted.
How big around were the tunnels that we went through? That's the rule, kind
of. In the intermediate drifts, I think were like 5x6. It was supposed to be, but usually you ended up bigger because of slabbing off. And the main haulage, I think, was supposed to be like a 12x10 or something like that. I'm not sure on those figures. Like the 1500 portal. Yeah. No, we had little man trains that we rode in. When we left the dry to go underground, it was from portal. We got paid from portal to portal. In other words, our time started when we got on the train, on the little man train, and we got back to number 2 shaft. And so we were out of the mine exactly in the 8 hours. So, sometimes it'd take you a half hour or so to get to your working area. And then you had to leave early enough to fill out your time card at, on the 1500 level and get ready to leave. They were really good about it that way. I mean, they had to have some convenience.
Did they have electric lights down there, or did you have a headlamp on your...
Yeah, I had headlamps, yeah. They were good battery lamps too, really good. They would hold up for the whole 8 hours. And when you went back to the dry, you turn them in to the lamp man, and he'd put them back on charge. They were waterproof and everything. They had to be.
Was there a lot of water in this mine?
Hmm?
Was there a lot of water in this mine?
Yeah, there was a lot of water, yeah. The main shaft, I think that the pump in the shaft was pumped something like 1,000 gallons a minute. Because you had regular little creeks running down in that shaft.
Still coming out of there too.
Yeah, it's filled up now. It's coming out.
How did you keep dry while you were working?
You didn't.
You just dammed all that out.
It was wet. Whole shift. There's no way.
Just get used to it.
Yeah. Now, like on the 2300 level where the air was bad, yeah, it wasn't all that bad, but it was hot there. Yeah. I'd work and I'd have to pull off my boots because I'd sweat so much and dump the water out. Oh, you just sweat all the time on some of those levels.
How did you manage in the wintertime going home when you were so wet?
Well, when we got off ship, we'd go into the dry, shower, and change clothes. And all our wet clothes were put on big baskets, and we had little baskets were hooked to little pulleys to the ceiling, and pull them to the ceiling. And of course, there's plenty of heat in there. Have them dried out for you. Came back.
Which building up here on that level now was that dry?
Right there where the OASA office.
Well, as you come up the hill, as the road comes up.
Yeah,
the hill, right
be the first building. That was the drive.
Was it top or bottom?
No, it was top.
The top one.
Yeah. And they had good showers, so there was plenty of warm water. You cleaned up before you went home. They had to. You could throw it out of the house.
Your wife wouldn't let you in the house. All right, back there. Yes, go ahead.
The single men ate at a mess hall.
For the dining
room? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where you're eating.
That was taken out of their pay, was it?
No, it was taken out of their pay. I think at the time I was here, it was room and board was like 2.5 a day. You know, it wasn't bad at all. You know.
Good food.
Good food, yeah. Real good food.
What was your groceries? Did they have a good supply of things coming in all the time so that we had a choice?
Yeah, they had the grocery store right down here where the shop is now. Isn't that the shop or something? Mm. The last building. They had a grocery store in Chelan. The same people had this one here named Birmingham.
Birmingham.
I was thinking it was Birmingham. But they had fresh vegetables. We had meat, everything. Things are a little bit high, but we had.
Did you have your own garden in your house?
Gardening didn't work out too well up here. Some people tried it. Too much frost and time.
It hasn't really worked out for the village.
Too short of summers.
Same old story.
We used to pull our daughter, well, most everybody did this. We walked from the, you know, the housing down to the store. We had sleds, built boxes on the sled, and put the kids in that and cover them up, and that's the way you went. We called it downtown here. The post office, the store, and picked up our groceries, our mail. If you carry your groceries, you didn't have too many in the big box on the sled, back and forth.
How did the mine get the electricity?
The electricity was, I call it piped in here from Chelan Falls. We got a big powerhouse down there. It was more stable, best for the company when I stopped to think about it. Now, that rather than build a dam up here, because they didn't have to worry like about, you know, power outages.
All right.
Are there any of them had private automobiles up here at that time for any reason?
In the summertime, you were allowed automobiles, but in wintertime, you either parked them here in the snowbank or they would take them out for you by barge.
Did you do any fishing and hunting when you were up here?
Oh, yeah. Lots of it. Mountain climbing, you name it. Yeah, this is my flavor.
How was fishing then?
Fishing was very good.
Yeah, it was really good. Well, it still is, I think, at times. It should be, anyway.
Did the company provide vacation time for you also, or was this 52
weeks a year? Yeah, that was good. The first year you got like 1 week, second year you got 2 weeks, the third year you got 3 weeks. I think most industries don't do that anymore. You have to work a longer time, period of time to get it. That was to entice people to stay here.
Yeah. We did happen to meet, he worked here, he was at one time a senator of the state of Nevada, worked here in the mine as a miner, bought a home up here. Who would have never guessed he was a senator at one time. Unless I had seen the clippings and the pictures, I would not have believed it. But he was working as a miner.
Did you get your house, you sold your house then when you left?
Mm-hmm. We sold it to someone that lived at Lucerne, that was working in the mine, family.
Did they have the beautiful flowers?
Oh, yes, some of them had real, real pretty yards and flowers. We didn't have our yard in yet. A lot of the new homes didn't have theirs in. But some of the older ones had very nice lawns, flowers.
Why did they tear the village down?
The Forest Service did this, I understand.
Yeah, this when the village was turned over to the Lutheran Church by the House Island Mining Company, we could only handle so many buildings here, and we just didn't have the resources, financial and otherwise, to take care of also the miners' village, because that was practically intact. And so the Forest Service just came in and burned it down, which is part of their policy all over anyhow. I mean, if we have to leave here now, for some reason or another, and we were not going to use it, they'd come in and burn everything down.
About how many houses were up in there?
Roughly about 102.
Yes. How many?
About 102 homes.
What did they charge for a house?
You, we were talking about that the other day. It seems to me that I borrowed $1,100 to buy the one we had, and I paid that off plus another $500 or $600. I can't remember exactly, but
I think
we
paid $30 and was it
$30 a month? Yeah. Working 7 days a week wasn't hard to meet.
That's what was the price of the home.
Did you get time and a half in for over $40 in that?
Yeah.
It was all paneling in the our home, you know. And the halfway up they had paneling. So it was nice.
Do you remember what you sold it for then?
You sold it for $500 down, I remember that.
Was there a large turnover labor-wise, and what property you folks believe what you did?
Well,
mostly because my neighbor who was killed, I went to work that day with him, and we got off the cage, and he went into one work area and I went into another. I had to come back to the shaft to pick up my steel, and Cager asked me if I'd saw Danny, and his last name was Williams, and I said, well, I just left him. And he said, well, they think he's fell down an ore path, and he did. I helped get him out, and then when we got him out, I didn't go back to work anymore.
That was your last day, in other
words. Yeah, 1954. You're getting kind of tired. There was a lot of accidents, and you never knew. You got so you didn't know if you were going to come out
there
or not.
There wasn't too many killed, really, though, there, in there.
Hell, more than what they say, you know. That a lot of some guys that got injured pretty bad, you might just as well have been dead, you know, crippled for life.
Fred Wigberth was one of them that was blinded. That had the he had a store in the back of the post office, and we lived here, and he ran the store. He was, I guess, blasted in the mind. Was that what happened?
Yeah, blinded.
He was blind, so he had a small store in the back of the post office when we lived here.
And then when my brother-in-law was killed by a blast, yeah, I had a friend who was working with him at the time. And of course, he lost his eyes for life, too. Yeah. Yeah, it was about 6 months after I left.
There's another man that lost his arm, and you're working there.
So is this a single shift operation?
Pardon?
Is this a single shift operation?
Oh, yeah.
Single around shift? No, it's around the clock.
Around the clock.
Oh, around the clock.
Yeah, around the clock. When, it's, yeah.
When do they do their blasting? Just any time?
Yeah, any time.
You guys see any kind of unusual?
No. Oh, well, it was a big enough operations. Like they'd have one group working in a different area that they were going to blast. So the Schlesserman blasted it all the time.
You'd have to keep it going because of the high overhead.
Yeah.
You had to run that ore out of here and be able to meet the payroll.
Yeah. Sometimes you could feel those blasts down in the campsite here, long hole blast. Make the whole ground shake.
You mentioned the 4-5-6 game. Was there a lot of gambling going on up here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was pastime.
Did they have a special area or just...
Right down there where the pool tables are, in the back there. And
they had
a few slot machines, one-armed bandits.
Some of them did a lot of gambling.
That's one thing I never got hooked on was gambling. I made my own home brew.
I see a lot of hops being grown up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to tear some of those down. That was done this morning. Getting too close to the high tension wire up there, and we got to pull those down before somebody gets hurt.
Well, they're enjoying them.
Yeah. Oh, they like it. They get all hopped up.
Yeah. So you and the neighbor made home brew in a crock. I remember that in the basement one time.
Did it blow up?
Ours didn't. One time, the neighbor on the other side, he put some bottle home brew under the bed. The cast blew off of that.
Was there any kind of village management or anything like that, other than the company management? Did you have a mayor or council or anything like that? How do you handle difficulties between or in the community itself that
need
a little arbitration?
Okay, we had a
Sims was a fireman.
Sims, yeah, he's a fireman, and he handled anything criminal, or which very rarely that ever happened. And he had a nice, you know, like he was kind of a game warden type, and constable or whatever you want to call it. Really didn't have
no problems.
I was just one big happy family.
That I knew of.
When I go guy with anything like that happened, they would down the road they'd go, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, that would happen, and that would come through management here. Yeah, that's how you kept. Yeah.
What about the guy that bootlegged the liquor in here? That was after we left, wasn't it? And he was caught with a big write up in the paper?
Yeah, that was after we left.
It's in the Wenatchee Daily World. Bootlegs. Liquor into the wilderness.
Yeah. Some of the early information about Holden itself you can find in Nigel Adams' book, mm-hmm. in the store. But also you've got, I think there's some photographs and the like of at the portal, our museum here. Not only of the village start per se, but of Holden and its mining days. I think you get the pictures there. You look at the picture of the mill as it was working, mm-hmm. there, and then you compare it with the way it looks now. Time is devastating sometimes.
It really is. I was looking at those yesterday.
Yeah, it's even hard for me to remember a lot of the questions that you're asking, because they're not on my mind anymore.
There's times you kind of want to forget.
Yeah.
How many times have you folks been back here?
This is the first time my wife has been back in 30 years.
He's been three times.
I've been back here, backpack trips and things like that.
A lot of feelings,
you
know, when you first came in.
Right.
Did you walk down over here?
Yes, we did.
Nothing there now.
Well, the steps are there, and the rock wall part of that is not collapsed.
You
yet.
Were actually on the road then.
On the front.
The second row up.
The second row up. Okay.
From the road.
Mm-hmm. So the same old tree is still there that clothesline was hooked to.
The fully clothesline is pulled out.
Who's that? Picture of some of the ladies that were living here up at the portal. Are you in that, David?
No, that's Honeymoon Heights.
Yeah.
When they had the home site up near the mine. See, the home site we had was down for the ballpark area going toward Heart Lake. So that was before our time that they had the home site.
Was some homes up above the mine?
Originally, yeah.
Originally, they were up there for the home site.
Just like they got it here.
They
had a road up there, and believe it or not, it's relatively flat ground up there where they built the houses. You can't tell by looking, standing down here and looking up there. Yeah, at Honeymoon Heights.
I didn't see flat ground.
Well, it's where you could build a home, but they had roads up there.
Okay. Anyone else? Might think about drawing this to a close. You've been a very appreciative audience, I know.
Great audience.
On behalf of Bill and Theda, we thank them for being with us, and thank you all for being here. And we'll be ready for lunch here shortly, but let's give the Sartains a good hand.